Hi, you're listening to Truth News Radio Australia, and it is the 16th of August 2012 in Australia. Welcome to another show, ladies and gentlemen. It's great to have your company today. My name's Hereward Fenton, and today I'm going to be unweaving, unwinding, and unravelling some of the complexities of what's going on in the world. I'm actually going to try and connect some dots for you today. There are some very important developments which, as usual, are not being properly conveyed in the mainstream media. Our lead story for today, and this is going to lead into some other topics which we'll be addressing throughout the show, is the Julian Assange situation in London. Now, what has happened is that the UK government has threatened to raid the Ecuadorian embassy to extract Julian Assange, who, of course, has taken asylum in the assembly there and is seeking asylum in Ecuador as a political dissident because, of course, he believes that he is being persecuted by the international forces, including the US government and the Swedish government. And currently his status is that he is waiting for a decision to be made by the Ecuadorian government. However, the British government has now put forward a very, very threatening, very ominous declaration, which the Ecuadorian government is taking as a threat against its sovereignty. So I'm actually going to play you a clip now from ABC, that's Australian Broadcasting Corporation News. This is fresh, hot off the presses. Here we go.
Okay, let's update you now on the Julian Assange situation. The Ecuadorian foreign minister has been holding a media conference in Ecuador. Listening in has been our Spanish-speaking reporter, Michael Vincent. He joins us now from Sydney. Michael, good morning to you. Where are we at? What is the story here?
Well, Michael, the Ecuadorian foreign minister, Ricardo Patiño, he gave a very brief press conference this morning. He was expected to grant Julian Assange asylum. Instead, he has given an extraordinary claim that the British embassy, the British government, has written to the Ecuadorian government, is expressly saying that they will go into the Ecuadorian embassy in London and arrest Assange if he is not handed over. He has denounced this as a break in international norms. He says, we are not a British colony, the colonial times are over, and he has attacked them for even suggesting that they could go into Ecuadorian soil in such an aggressive way. He's taken it as a direct threat to their sovereignty and their freedom and obviously diplomatic norms, which you know, if you have an embassy, that territory is your territory.
And the foreign minister give any indication of when he may grant officially asylum to Julian Assange, even taking into account that threat?
Well, no, there is expected to be yet another press conference tomorrow morning. This is sort of a 7 o'clock our time, Eastern Australian time, tomorrow morning. And that, again, we will all expect that that's when an announcement will be made. It may well yet be a response to the British threat. The Foreign Minister says he's going off to discuss these grave matters with the President of Ecuador, Rafael Correa, and they will take it from there at this stage.
Okay, I'll just leave it there. Now, the situation is obviously quite critical there for Julian Assange. It's also quite critical in terms of international relations. Entering the Ecuadorian embassy would be an invasion of Ecuadorian sovereign territory. This is a very significant development in the whole WikiLeaks saga. And I would like to suggest that there is a reason why this is happening now, which is connected to other information which is coming out through WikiLeaks. And I'm going to move on to discuss another story that erupted in our media earlier this week and now appears to have been pulled and erased from our major media. And this is, of course, the story that came out of WikiLeaks about the surveillance system called Trapwire, which has now, it has been revealed, is now being used in several countries around the world, and it is a kind of a total information awareness surveillance system which pulls data from surveillance cameras in order to track, as they say, persons of interest. Now, I have an article which was published in the Sydney Morning Herald several days ago and is now gone. And this appears to be as a result of government intervention, because we've actually had the Defense Department here say that they will not talk about it, and they will neither confirm nor deny any reports about the surveillance system being in use. And we also had a motion to question the Australian government in the Senate completely quashed. In other words, the Senate, led by Scott Ludlam, wanted to propose a question to the government: are you using this trapwire surveillance system? No, you may not answer the question. Go away. So that's the situation we are at. Now, I'll read to you the article, which has been pulled from all the major news sites. Luckily, a friend of mine who runs Fair Dinkum Radio has a copy of it on his site. The headline of the story was "Surveillance System Linked to Transport and Defence Contractor." And this is from the Sydney Morning Herald. I don't actually have the exact date, but it's from just about 3 or 4 days ago. A controversial surveillance system that synthesizes high-tech security camera footage and online data to predict suspicious activity is owned by an international conglomerate awarded hundreds of millions of dollars in Australian government transport and defence contracts. The Trapwire system, as the program is known, is owned by Cubic Corporation, which in 2010 signed a $370 million contract with the New South Wales government to provide Sydney's public transport ticketing system. Cubic also runs similar systems in Brisbane and has a subsidiary of its defence business based in Queensland. Trapwire has caused the company a storm of online criticism after its purported role was revealed last week. While there is no evidence to suggest that it has yet been brought to Australia, the Australian Defence Department would issue only a cryptic statement on it yesterday. The Defence Department is aware of the Trapwire system. However, it would be inappropriate to provide further comment on this system or its capabilities. And that's a quote from a defence spokesperson. And they made the further comment that defence does not comment on intelligence operational capabilities. So what is Trapwire? Well, it's a computer system which is given access to security camera networks and which uses facial and body recognition combined with aggregated information provided by governments and social media. Note, social media is now involved, to prevent terrorist attacks. Interesting, they use the word prevent terrorist attacks. Of course, that's a very, very vaunted, preposterous claim. But of course, that's the way the model now is. Pre-crime, we basically intervene before it happens using all of our cyber intelligence gathering. We can know when the crime's about to be committed. We can deconstruct that later, of course, as well. And it talks here about recognizing suspicious patterns of activity. It forwards its reports to a wide array of US police departments, intelligence agencies, and public departments. The detail about Trapwire was found in emails between executives at the private intelligence company Stratfor and released by WikiLeaks. Now, of course, Stratfor again emerges as a key player in both marketing this tool and is being a kind of a point of contact between the government and the companies that are producing it. And we've seen in the past, Stratfor has been exposed as having very strong ties with the CIA. Some people would say Stratfor is simply a public front of the CIA. According to the WikiLeaks emails, the Trapwire installed in some of the Western world's most sensitive locations. According to the emails, Trapwire is installed in some of the Western world's most sensitive locations, including the White House, No. 10 Downing Street, Scotland Yard, and the London Stock Exchange, as well as 500 locations on the New York subway system. Now, as I mentioned earlier, this article and all copies of that article in affiliated news services has been pulled from the media here. And you'll still find references to it in Google, but if you follow those links, there is nothing there. They've all been pulled. And subsequent to that, Cubic Corporation has put out a press release saying that it has no affiliation with Trapwire. Cubic Corporation acquired Abraxas Corporation, which is the company that directly markets the Trapwire system. Now, it says here on the press release that Abraxas Corporation has no affiliation with Cubic Corporation. It says here that erroneous reports have linked the company with Trapwire. Actually, I should just read to you the PR. This is the press release, and it's a bit confusing, okay, because we do know that the company was acquired by Cubic Corporation. And this is from August the 13th, 2012. Cubic Corporation acquired Abraxas Corporation on December 20, 2010. Abraxas Corporation then and now has no affiliation with Abraxas Applications, now known as Trapwire Inc. Okay, now we're getting to the core of this. Okay, there's two separate entities here, Abraxas Corporation, Abraxas Applications. It says here that erroneous reports have linked the company with Trapwire Inc. Trapwire Inc. is a risk mitigation technology and services company that builds and markets software products to prevent terrorist threats and criminal attacks. Cubic Corporation is the parent company of three major business segments: defense systems, mission support services, and transportation. Cubic Defense Applications, a leading supplier of combat training systems, communications and cyber technologies. Sorry, it's a very badly written press release. That's why I'm stumbling over the wording of it. Cubic Mission Support Services is a leader of training, operations, maintenance, and technical support services. Cubic Transportation Systems is the world's leading provider of automated fare collection systems and services. This is impossible. I can't even read this rubbish. This is an attempt to diffuse the speculation, and they're putting it all in gobbledygook that has no meaning and isn't even grammatically correct. They're trying to distance themselves from the ownership of this product, and I think they failed because it was already out and WikiLeaks has leaked it. And, you know, one branch of it is called systems, the other one's called applications. It's all just fiddling with names, and they're going to try and use that to just scrub themselves and make themselves look as if they're okay. So as a result of that press release, the pressure on the government now has been, do we have the Trapwire system operating in Australia? And as I mentioned earlier, the government has refused to answer the question. You're with Truth News Radio Australia. We're going to break. Stay with us. Are you getting fed up with all the disinformation, deception, spin, propaganda, half-truths and downright lies in mainstream news? Looking for something different? Visit Truth News Radio Australia, www.truthnews.com.au, and may the truth set you free. Hi, you're back with Truth News Radio Australia. It's great to have your company today. You can find us on the web at www.truthnews.com.au, and of course you can call into the show if you'd like to have a talk about this current crisis with WikiLeaks and Julian Assange, or about the Trapwire surveillance system, which was leaked to the media by WikiLeaks. You can call us And you can call us from Australia on 1300 153 372. And you can call us from the US on 512 646 1984. And I'd just like to welcome to the show George Georgis. George, welcome back to Truth News.
Thanks,
Robert. Great to have you aboard again. George, look, my take on the situation with Julian Assange is that he's trying to protect himself by selectively leaking more and more disturbing information through WikiLeaks, which I guess could prove to the powers that be that perhaps he's more of a threat, and that would then protect him against taking action. That's just my guess, because I noticed this confluence of events with the scandal over the Trapwire system erupting at the same time as we have an announcement from the UK government that they're going to basically raid the embassy. But it seems that instead of actually protecting him further, it's just enraging them more, and they're now just going to trample over the sovereignty of other nations and breach diplomatic relations and just go in and just put a bag over his head. I mean, what's your take on this whole situation?
All right, I've just been watching the wire services, and some 40 minutes ago, the police have amassed outside the Ecuadorian embassy in London. Now, if they go in, there could be a double situation there where we've got this constantly in politics, where there's a public persona and there's a reality behind the scene. So the Ecuadorians might be jumping up and down, but they've tacitly agreed to get rid of Assange. They don't want to throw him out. Let's take it from another perspective now. I'm not saying anything for or against Assange. Assange is becoming a nuisance to the Ecuadorians. There are other ways that he could have handled this particular matter if he was concerned about Sweden or America. Also, I have a problem accepting fully that all the WikiLeaks material is actually coming from WikiLeaks. So there could be other situations there. As far as jumping into Ecuadorian embassy in London's concerned, the Ecuadorians could easily say, if you come onto our territory in London, we're going to expel your ambassador in Ecuador. So indeed, we'll see what happens in that regard. Now, in 1980, we had British incursions in the Iranian embassy in London, these names now. And in 1984, a similar situation occurred with the Iraqi embassy in London. So these problems with the Middle East, Iran, Iraq and such, have been going on for a number of decades. If you recall back, Iran's assets were frozen in the United States during the Reagan administration, and there was a bit of a problem concerning that. So these arguments with these states have been going on for some time. Returning back to the Assange situation, as I said, to protect himself or to even to draw public attention to what he was releasing, I think there are other ways of handling it. I think he's, without detracting from him or what he does, I think there are other ways he could have handled this situation and received the same amount of publicity. I think the Ecuadorian choice, as I said to you at that time, Herowood, I thought it was not a good choice at that time, and there were other ways of handling this matter. Now, we've had, as I said, with Iran and Iraq previously in London, so it's not a new situation, but it's usually done on a tit-for-tat basis. So if you raid our embassy, we're expelling your ambassadors. If you do this, we're doing that, because the agreements are broken down. So there would have to be some behind-the-scenes nod if they go charging in there and drag him out. Lots of protests and lots of noises made. So I think there's more behind that than what we're aware of with regard to the material that's being released and such. Going on to the Stratfor cables, there are a number of companies involved with this. It comes down to contractors and that. With the CCTV cameras that are all around our streets, and it was trialled in Australia is a good trial ground for a lot of this material. These CCTV cameras were in London many years ago, I remember. Now, it's only a short step to the new technology where these cameras can be used to identify people. I noticed that on the way to Canberra, this sort of technology with cameras and such, they were experimenting with this back in the late 80s. And I remember seeing these cameras and the results of what was happening. Over the road between Sydney and Canberra, which is the national capital here, there's what appears to be a bridge, but it isn't. There's a bank of cameras on either side of this particular emplacement, and they've been experimenting down there with recognition of vehicles, number of people in there, being able to read number plates and such for quite a while. So I think it was only a small step.
Can I just interject briefly, George? I believe you're absolutely right. However, there is something here that's different about Trapwire to what we have understood about camera surveillance in the past, and it's all about what they call predictive. Because the essence of this, and if you read all the PR statements, I've got an excellent article here from ZDNet.com, and it says here that the software uses algorithms and data to predict potentially criminal behavior. Now, here is a direct quote from the Strat4 leaked document. There are a variety of new tools such as Trapwire, a software system designed to work with camera systems to help detect patterns of pre-operational surveillance that can be focused on critical areas to help cut through the fog of noise and activity and draw attention to potential threats. This is not about trying to find someone who did a bad thing, which we all sort of all agree with. You know, like if someone robbed a bank or a 7-Eleven and you got the guy's face on camera, most people think, yeah, look, that's fair enough because we want to find the guy who did that. But forget about that. This is a whole other level. What they're doing now is they're predicting what people are going to do based on some absurd algorithm invented by PsyOps teams that basically – you know, you're guilty before you've even done anything. It's not even like you're guilty until proven innocent. You're guilty before you've even committed a crime. Over to you, George.
Yeah, it's totally out of control, but it was predictable because this industry, this security industrial complex, is definitely going to mutate down further roads. It's more money for them. It's more control for government. It's people believe it because, oh, we can stop crime before it starts. We can stop this terrorism. But terrorism is a generic. Communism was a generic, if you remember the McCarthy era. These things are moving into ridiculous proportion. Now, during the week, there was a story that came out that Emirates Airline, Virgin Airlines and the Qantas Jetstar Group were moving male passengers on aircraft because they're not permitted to sit next to minors. So we've had a few stories out there and a few complaints. Now, they reverse that situation. So effectively, any male on an aircraft was a preemptive strike in case this person is a pedophile, in case this person objects to objectionable behaviour. Now, this is all wrong. So moving down these paths, government should be the moral standard. And Trapwire, Sandline, Strat4, Cubic, Abraxas, even the old reconstituted Wackenhut, Halliburton, Carlyle, any corporations that are involved in any of this sort of activity, the RFID companies and such, they should be controlled by government. And it shouldn't be a situation where it's they're given carte blanche through this situation. Now, we've had the FBI in America interfering internationally in a number of ways. They were involved with the Mega Upload case in New Zealand. So domestically, America makes a decision, or British intelligence through their offsiders make decisions, so other people are affected. Now, Mega Upload, Kim.com appealed to the High Court in New Zealand, and the FBI case was thrown out. Now, it's a situation of our morality above yours, but these monitoring companies only do what they do because they've been allowed to do that. So the ticketing situation in Australia, money changes hands and we get to do the ticketing and we can lift the ticketing price, and by the way, we can do all this as well and make your place safe. Now, trying to make a place super safe doesn't necessarily bring you that situation. The Volstead Act in the 1920s in the United States we're going to control alcohol, we're going to ban this. And what came out of that? You had crime organisations build up, which still exist to this day, and nothing was accomplished. As a matter of fact, the situation became worse. We've got a situation in Australia now in an area called King's Cross, which is quite a violent and out-of-control area. So there's too much liquor being
George,
sold.
We're just heading to break.
Right.
We'll actually get more into that King's Cross story a bit later. You're with Truth News Radio Australia. Do stay with us. Very important show today. We'll be right back after these ads. Currently covering the emerging crisis here with Julian Assange under threat of police abduction from the Ecuadorian embassy. Georgios, earlier today, yep. You were telling me about a previous incursion that actually happened on the Libyan embassy. Could you actually...
It was Iranian in London in 1980.
Right, and you were saying earlier that a policeman had been shot and the...
That was the Iraqi in St. James Square. I was actually there at the time, and the shot rang out. Everyone dived to the ground, and the young, in her 20s, police constable there, Yvonne Fletcher, was shot dead. The argument was that it came from the Iraqi embassy in St. James Square. I might just give a couple of little background notes here.
Yeah, sure.
To have embassies don't exist in St. James Square, as they don't exist in South Audley Street, because these areas and Gloucester Square and up the top of Curzon Street, these are hardcore intelligence areas. London is a centre of intelligence.
Now, can I just ask,
Virginia?
George, is that where the stock markets are as well?
No, that's up in the city area. Okay, and okay. I've been through those there. They're bunkered in quite well and the roads are blocked as well and you can't get major vehicles through. So I've been through the Life Exchange, London International Financial Futures Exchange. I've been to the London Stock Exchange. I've been through those places there. They bunkered in when a bomb blast occurred in the city of London some number of years ago. What happened was a shot rang out. Yvonne Fletcher was killed. Now, St. James Square is on the – where this embassy was in the corner, the left of that and just coming around the side of that, there are two buildings which are operated by the Institute of International Affairs. Now, on the two ends, on the left and right side, if you're facing that embassy, they're intelligence buildings, and the building in the front was basically empty at that time. Now, that's between German Street and Paul Mall on the other side. St. James Road runs down there, the far side there. Now, what we did was we went back and we were looking at the footage, and we realised that if... it's an enclosed area. There were echoes and such. Now, if a sound comes from directly in front of you or from directly behind you, you don't really know where the sound comes from. It could be in either because both your ears are detecting the sound at the same time. Now, I watched the footage over and over again, and what we saw was a shot rang out. Everyone hit the ground, and we noticed that a lot of the people were looking behind. So if you're at an angle... where the sound from to the sound, you're better likely to pick up where the sound is coming from. And in that footage there that I watched over and over, this particular footage, I could see that everyone's looking from behind, from opposite the Iraqi where the Iraqi embassy was at that time. Also, when I went back there subsequently. There's a little plaque on the ground, as it should be. It's way down away from where this shooting actually took place. Similarly, I seem to be in the wrong places at the right times, unfortunately. Yeah. I was there at the Hilton bombing as well in Sydney, as you're aware, and I was actually the first person down. There was one police officer come running down the side there, and I was actually the first other person there. That plaque is also way down the street, away from where that blast took place. So it's away from those areas. That's just a small point. But the Iraqis were expelled, and there was commotion brought about. So these problems with the
Middle
East.
Can I just ask, George, just to cut to the chase here? Was there actually an incursion on the Iraqi embassy? This is the key question here.
No, they wanted.
Is there any precedent for? Now, I just want to quote to you the letter, because I've got a new article up here from the Guardian, and they've actually released details of the letter that was sent to the Ecuadorian government. And it says here that they have the legal basis. Let me just try and find the exact quote. At a press conference yesterday, Ricardo Patino, Ecuador's foreign minister, released details of a letter that was delivered through the British embassy in Quito. The letter said, "You need to be aware that there is a legal base in the UK, the Diplomatic and Consular Premises Act 1987, that would allow us to take actions in order to arrest Mr. Assange in the current premises of the embassy." It added, "We need to reiterate that we consider the continued use of the diplomatic premises in this way incompatible with the Vienna Convention and unsustainable, and we have made clear the serious implications that this has for our diplomatic relations." Patino says he was deeply shocked by the letter. Speaking to reporters later, he says, "The government of Ecuador is considering a request for asylum and has carried out diplomatic talks with the governments of the United Kingdom and Sweden. However, today we're receiving a written threat that they could attack our embassy in London." And it says, "Ecuador is, as a state that respects rights and justice, is a democratic and peaceful nation state and rejects in the strongest possible terms the explicit threat of the British official communication." Has this happened before? Do we have a precedent for the UK government, and I mean, let's talk about other parts of the world as well, but do we have a precedent here for an embassy which is actually considered to be the sovereign territory of another nation being stormed in this way?
In 1980, the Iranian embassy in London was raided by the SAS. Now, they had the problem there was that five or six alleged terrorists had occupied the embassy, had taken 26 people into hostages, and had killed one of these people. The SAS raided the Iranian embassy. There's argument backwards and forwards in there.
Yeah.
There's interpretation of the Vienna Convention concerning missions. With the Iraqi situation in London in 1984, where Yvonne Fletcher was shot, the situation there was they wanted the guy who fired the shot from the window, bring him out or everyone leave. So instead of that being raided, they managed to shred their material inside and they packed off. So there are situations internationally. If this happened in London or Washington or even Canberra, for example, it would draw a line up. Now, I have a suspicion that behind the foot stomping and noise, that there may be an arrangement with Ecuador behind the scenes and the British and Americans to get him out of there. This can't go on for 27 years. So it had to reach a head at some stage, because the Americans or the British over there are not looking too well as far as credibility is concerned if some guy can just jump in there. So it creates precedent. So you end up with people piling into this and that embassy over there and throw me out if you can. So I've got a suspicion that really I think that he should have handled it differently. I don't believe, with all respect to him, I don't believe that he's handled this situation as best he could. There were other options available. But anyway, we'll see what happens. There are situations where even in Sydney, the Chinese consulate had been infiltrated, and there were cameras and recording devices installed in the Chinese consulate in Sydney. They've moved now. They moved some years ago to a bunker. But these situations occur in the American embassy in Moscow. There was argument there. This is an old story about how the Russians knew what was going on, and they had they were the first with this new technology of picking up vibrations off windows. So
right.
There's a lot of interesting stuff. But as far as marching into somebody else's territory is concerned, I believe that's been done. The only
Of course, the context there would be, well, a crime was being committed, people were being held hostage, therefore, I mean, it still, I guess, is a violation of diplomatic privileges,
well,
but it's a bit more excusable than in the sense where Ecuador is not in breach of any kind of international law. They are actually, assessing an asylum application. And for that to be overridden by force, by violence, well, it would seem to be unprecedented. It's certainly, you know, there may have been cases, as you describe, where – now, do you actually have any more details on what actually fully transpired during that raid on the Iranian embassy? So the SAS actually stormed the building. Did they end up arresting the militants inside the embassy?
No, there was a massive shootout. Five of we'll use the word terrorists. Five of those were killed. Another was locked up in Britain for 27 years. He's been released now. And that story sort of gone by the by. But the 26, 25 of the 26 were released from there. But that, look, I seem to go back to, I never expected Ecuador to give Julian Assange any political asylum. And these decisions can be made much more quickly. They don't drag out for weeks.
We're just heading to break again, George. We'll continue with that.
You're all right.
With Truth News Radio Australia. It's great to have your company today. Please stay with us. Got a few ads and we'll be right back. Back here with Truth News Radio Australia. My name's Herewood Fenton. I'm bringing you today a breaking story from the UK. Julian Assange, sitting in the Ecuadorian embassy, been there for over a month, might be even 6 weeks now. Must have been hard for him in there. Obviously, you know, he hasn't had a chance to get out and breathe the fresh air. Hopefully he's had a swim in the pool. I don't know if they've got gyms or swimming pools. Anyway, the guy's been under a lot of pressure. It must have been very, very difficult. WikiLeaks continuing to leak sensitive information. We've got the information about the Trapwire surveillance system having come out in the media this week, causing a big scandal. And we see at the same time as that, the government now converging. And it's almost to me as if they've decided, look, we're just going to take you out, boy. You know, you've been a pain in the butt, and we're just basically going to take you out. You're not going to threaten us anymore. I think the point is here, they believe that that WikiLeaks is a threat to them, and I possibly think that Julian Assange has been trying to consolidate his position by selectively leaking information and saying, look, we've got more, watch out. that's just a guess. George, you've got an opinion about this whole situation in regard to that. I mean, what do you think the situation is in regard to the way world governments perceive WikiLeaks, and how does that reflect on what is going on right now?
There's no doubt that WikiLeaks has given us some very good information, and they are a pain in the butt to a lot of governments in the West. And they've exposed a lot of very good information that we should be aware of. What do the governments say to us? If we've got nothing to fear, we've got nothing to hide. Well, that the people who tell us that are really the ones who have more to hide. With the situation in London at the moment with the Ecuadorians, I still maintain if Julian is brought out of there, I still maintain that some background agreement has been set. Now, the British government can easily cut off them. The Home Secretary can send them a letter and say the embassy is to pack up and leave within 24 hours, and besides, we're cutting off the power and the water to the building. So there's a number of ways that this can be handled. Assange, at that moment when the police go in, it's not really an embassy. And then afterwards, the Home Secretary can drop them another letter and say, oh, by the way, we've re-established the credentials of your mission here in Britain. So there's a number of ways it can handle it. But the way he did it, this had to come to a head. That's why I keep going back, and I'm not attacking WikiLeaks or Assange, but I keep going back to the point that there were other ways of doing this and there were other options. It wasn't an issue of going through the list of nations in the world and finding one where I can go and camp and they will give me asylum.
Right.
There's more to it than that, and he did have other options. I do believe he's been wrongly advised. There are many things he could have done. And
well, you know what I find interesting, George, is that the appeal that he made against his extradition was based on very, very minor technical legal points about whether the extradition warrant was issued by a proper judicial authority. That was the whole basis of Julian Assange's legal appeal, which took over a year and had some very high level barristers and QCs involved, right? But basically, his argument was not that the extradition was improper, which everyone thinks it is. I mean, no one in their right mind thinks it's correct for someone to be extradited and put under house arrest simply for something that is not even a jailable offence. And yet, that was never part of his legal argument. His legal argument was these fine technical legal points about what constitutes a judicial authority. And of course, that failed. Like, that argument didn't even work in the end. And then he then took this very dangerous and kind of, you know, well, lifting the ante, I guess, approach of throwing himself at the mercy of another sovereign country, which again seems to have jacked up the stakes, doesn't it?
Well, yeah, I don't want to speak about aspects of the industry of law where you know I'm involved, Herowood, but
sure. Well, I know you know a lot about it, though.
Well, I do believe that his legal advice could have been a lot better than what it was. And as you've said, the points argued there were very slim. They could have brought in things externally and argued and diverted the arguments. So unfortunately, I feel that the legal arguments put forward, as you raised just now, were not as strong as they could be. The whole thing seems to have been handled in a very, I don't like the word amateurish, but amateurish matter. There are other situations that could have happened. He could have very easily just disappeared out of Britain into a couple of other countries I can think of almost straight away. And the powers that be in those countries could have said, we're not sure, we think he's here, but we don't know where he is, which could have been a fair argument as well. So I think that he should have handled it differently. I keep going back to that point. I do believe that this is not a confrontation that's good. If they were concerned, if administrations were concerned about what he's got and therefore they're going to take him out, what he would have done is released more information about Britain to embarrass the administration there, or embarrass aspects of the British government there at this stage. So there would have been some sort of trade-off. So I don't think that
I've just got a news update here, George. It says, this is from news.com.au, says, reports suggest British police have been seen entering the Ecuadorian embassy.
Yeah.
Gee, that's vague. Reports suggest. Well, it says here, the Press Association had earlier reported officers arriving outside the Ecuadorian embassy close to the Harrods Store and Knightsbridge, London. So it may well be already in process. They may actually be extracting him as we speak. We'll know very soon, I guess, what the outcome of this is. Of course, you know, from my impression, George, it had to come to this point. I don't think Ecuador would have been allowed to take him. I don't think it would have been possible for Ecuador to do this and continue its relationship with the West because of the profile that this already has. It created probably an impossible situation. I mean, do you think that this is actually going to be an easy out for the Ecuadorians? They're going to just say, well, you violated our diplomatic space. That's terrible. They're going to have a big complaint about it. And then they're going to say, okay, well, it's over now. And is that what's going to happen, do you think?
Yeah, I believe that there's something else happening. The police might go into the foyer and say, give him over, and then they say they dragged him out. But it's...
But is this, in your mind, really connected? Is this driven by the threat that WikiLeaks represents to Western governments? And, you know, what is the scale of that threat? What is the real threat that WikiLeaks does represent? Because they haven't really released anything that you would say is dramatically, you know, destabilizing. Everything that they've done so far has been annoying, granted, but annoying in the sense of a mosquito. You know what I mean? Like an annoying mosquito, you know, biting you over and over again. Nothing that really did any serious damage.
No, I think that you're right in that. Nothing is really, it's not like a Watergate, these sort of situations. Now, what would have happened if Philby, back in the 60s, had marched into the Ecuadorian or some other embassy somewhere in London instead of just packing off and heading to Russia? Eventually, he would have been held by brought out by the British government in some form or other. They were throwing him out. I think that more than I'll go out on the limb again now, but
sure,
I believe I'm correct. I believe I'm correct. Now, I think he's. I think Assange has brought himself to an eviction, rather than we're going to storm and drag him out. The material that WikiLeaks has released is nuisance value. It's not great earth-shattering value.
Yeah.
There are other ways he could have handled it legally, and as far as seeking asylum is concerned, there are many ways that this matter could have been conducted. I don't believe that where we are now is the best outcome for him. It's solving a problem for the British, the Americans, the Swedish, the Ecuadorians, and unfortunately he's expendable. And I have to stay with these arguments. As far as raiding other embassies that's concerned, there are precedents for that internationally. The Vienna Convention is subject to interpretation, as everything else is, convenience. It's more to do with, rather than protocols of the Vienna Convention, it's more to do with do the Ecuadorians want to be in Britain? Does Britain want the Ecuadorians? Do we want the British mission in Ecuador, yes or no? What's the value of this to us? It's to do with trade and other issues, apart from having a place where you can go and get a visa and such. So there are a lot of there has to be a comfortable relationship between granting a mission to a country and the exchange that takes place between the two countries. There's more involved than that.
But, of course, as far as the company Stratfor feels, I mean, they probably really would have a sigh of relief if Julian Assange was behind bars, wouldn't they? Because they seem to have been subject to a lot of these annoying leaks from WikiLeaks. I've got another article here from Wired.com, and it says here that the documents that were leaked last week show Stratfor being less than straight with its clients, using temporary jobs in government to set up trapwire contracts, calling it a wet dream. Apparently that's a quote that they actually use that word. In their emails, executives at Stratfor were hyping up a surveillance technology, but what they really did was provide reconnaissance on the $25 billion world of intelligence for hire that is ordinarily hidden from public view. In this case, the sunlight is not particularly flattering. So this, of course, is really the whole world of corporatism. You know, and from Mussolini's definition of that word, corporatism means the marriage of government and corporations. And of course, the revolving door between these large corporations and government has been well noticed for many years. And they really don't like having that exposed. You know, it's really annoying to them. But of course, from our point of view, it's only the tiniest tip of the iceberg in terms of what we think needs to be exposed. I mean, we want the real deeper conspiracies exposed, but we still have to be thankful for WikiLeaks for what they've done, and we have to support and defend Julian Assange. We're just heading to the end of the hour. We'll be back in the second hour with a whole lot more news, a lot more analysis. Don't go away. Really important show with Truth News Radio Australia.